from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Are getting beat in Detroit. This ball hit deep to left field, all the way back and gone. Jeremy Pena hits that fastball well, and he hits it out to left field. The Astros take a 3-1 lead. Ground ball slowly hit. Yiner Diaz will flip it to Hader covering. Astros win 3-2. Josh Hader covering first base. Hopefully he's fine. He kind of ran awkwardly off the bag, but he makes the final out as the Astros get their 26th consecutive save from Hader, and they now lead the AL West by a game and a half, their biggest lead of the season.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert. Todd Callis right there, because I was about to ask you, Seth Payne, the question I ask you practically every morning since the beginning of July. Have you heard the good news? Have you heard the good news? Todd Callis just told you the good news. The Astros are up in the AL West by more than a game for the first time all year. Game?
Taste that sweet, sweet cushion. It's not a park cushion. Yeah.
Game and
a
half.
This is a lacy, frilly cushion. This is not your frat house farting in a pillow and shoving in your buddy's face cushion. No. This is a cushion.
It's a cushion.
Yeah.
Down feathers. Yes.
We have to, by the way, I'm bringing the positive reinforcement.
You bringing the ding
for this
today?
First segment. Because as the Astros take on a team where the Rays sport both a Caminero and a Caballero,
right?
This is going to be a dicey one because both those players had big moments
they
in the game.
Involved. Yes, they were involved.
Caminero, the rookie phenom, who had some really good plays defensively against the Astros. Caballero, this is the moment in the game where I was like, oh, please don't play down to the Rays. Please, please don't play down the Rays. Caballero hits just an easy, simple fly ball single for a base hit, and Chaz just kind of strolls up on the ball.
Yeah.
And Caballero just goes to second. And Chaz throws a non-contestable throw there to second. I got nervous there. I was like, all right, don't play down to these guys.
No.
And then they would go on, including Chaz himself, to do some really good things after that. I went to bed at the bottom of the ninth because I was really tired, and Josh Hader was coming in a save situation.
Mm.
And I felt like, yeah, we're good.
Automatic.
We got this.
Yeah.
So it was news to me that the Astros were a game and a half ahead of the Mariners in the division.
Yeah, because the Mariners really suck lately. They lost 15-1 to the Tigers last night.
15-1?
15-1. Old AJ
Hinch.
Is
this an exhibition game?
It feels like it, right? It's 15-1. So the Astros up a game and a half. 7-game winning streak. Yordan broke the scoreboard before the game. That was cool.
Yeah. You know, the thing about it is, it's not like that scoreboard, it's not like it's up in the third deck or anything. I guess it speaks to the velocity that he could do it with. Come on, Rays.
Yeah.
I know you're the cheapest team in the league, but come on.
Dude,
it's a scoreboard.
Lean
it's
into
2024. Baseball's hit that scoreboard. What the hell?
I choose to believe that that scoreboard was one of the most sturdy scoreboards in baseball, and it's just the power of Yordan, man.
It's long renowned as the sturdiest scoreboard in baseball, and Yordan took it down.
Yordan strode to the plate on that Tuesday afternoon. Yeah, something flowery and poetic like that.
It was like John Henry beating the steam engine.
Exactly. Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
You know?
Yeah. Yes.
Your technology. If this was just an old school scoreboard, like the Astros have the sense to do, if it's going to get hit by baseballs, you put some tin out there. All right, not your fancy LED lights.
The thing I hate about the age we live in is I saw that, like most people probably did, on Twitter, and I saw the picture, and I'm like, okay, the person who posted that, it said, look what Yordan just did, I didn't know who it was. Like the first three people that posted it, I didn't know who they were. So I'm like, now I got to text McTaggart to see if it was true, because you never know. Like, I don't want to retweet it and go, look what Yordan did, and everybody's like, hey, dummy. It just broke. Somebody, you know, they were making a joke, you know.
Did McTaggart do the old John McClane and say, check my Twitter feed?
No, he didn't.
I already tweeted about this.
No, he confirmed it.
You try to check John's Twitter feed and you got to scroll through 487 retweets before you get to the relevant.
Dude, it's so
That's
bad.
Like Aaron Wilson, too. Aaron's awesome. Like, he breaks a lot of news and everything, but he breaks so much news and he puts so much out there that it's hard to, you know, 10 minutes ago he put something juicy out, but you got to scroll down through 58 posts to get to it.
The problem with, as you just pointed out, the problem with McClane is that he retweets everybody. So to find anything relevant that he himself tweeted is nearly impossible. Aaron tweets out the details of literally every NFL contract that's signed. Not just Texans, but like the Vikings will sign a practice squad offensive lineman and he's like, Joey Hassenpfeffer, right guard, 1 year, $1.25 million, game check bonus, 29th. $1,350.
And he has this encyclopedic memory where he'll say something to me like, well, yeah, you know, the Texans had that Yemeni Chuches in camp three years ago in minicamp, and they didn't like him, but he went off, and now he's the third string quarterback for the I don't know. Okay.
It's
all
remarkable.
Right.
Yeah. It's remarkable. So speaking of remarkable, the Astros 7-game winning streak. Here's Joe Espada after last night's 3-2 win over the Rays.
A little, you know, just urgency. There's fire. You know, we running. You know, we running down this finish line. And the guys are playing with urgency. There's a level of energy that I've seen this team do that before.
Bregman specifically, of course, just as far as the turnaround from his long-standing struggles, where he just looks like he's locked in and in the zone.
Big time.
That felt really good. Yiner just continues to show up.
Yep.
I mean, are we getting closer, Sean, to being comfortable, maybe thinking that this is just who Yiner is?
I'm comfortable with Yiner. My issue, and I know what you're alluding to, when you and I kind of went back and forth.
You basically spit on him.
I did not.
You did.
You
spit on his recent accomplishments and threw him under a bus.
That's not true. My concern with Yiner was as a cleanup hitter going into the postseason a couple of weeks ago, especially given the fact that you normally, if Kyle Tucker were healthy, you would have Kyle Tucker in that top four. So there's a big difference between healthy Kyle Tucker and what Yiner was at that time. Keep in mind, Seth, Yiner was hitting at that time, but not with the pop he's hitting with now. His OPS was still like in the 750s, and that was my concern, was that two things. One, Yiner is your cleanup hitter because there was no better alternative. I didn't have an issue with him hitting cleanup in that lineup because 5 through 9 stunk. My issue was if you get into the postseason and you're going against the Yankees and the Orioles and the Guardians and any other number of teams, is that your pop ends with Yordan Alvarez in the lineup. Yiner's hit with a lot more gusto lately. And so I'm I completely look. I've trusted Yiner since last year as a hitter. Dusty Baker was the one who didn't trust Yiner Diaz as a hitter. I just as a cleanup hitter was my concern with Yiner Diaz. He belongs in the lineup every day. Hell, not just belongs in the lineup every day. We can see last night he played first base. So they're rejiggering things to make sure his bat is in the lineup every
day. Right. And and he provided a dicey moment also with his defensive play at first place.
Yeah, the ball didn't even hit his glove when he went for the old scoop-a-loop there.
He also, you know, and there was a, I don't think it was an error, but it ended up being an out, but it could have been a double play where, you know, he had a line drive right into his groin area and could have, you know, could have ended an inning right there. Yeah. But, yeah, but you're exactly right. His bat is worth it.
Yeah.
Since June 1st, our young Yiner Diaz has had an OPS of 900.
Yeah.
June 3rd. From June 3rd until now.
Yeah.
So I guess that was the first game in June that he played. 900 OPS, 345 batting average. That's pretty good, Sean. That's what Altuve always shoots for, 300, 900.
I am Team Yiner, no doubt. And now it'll be interesting. Like, I would love to have this problem. The batting order, if Tucker comes back, will be kind of interesting to see because Yiner's kind of, as you pointed out, kind of started to acclimate himself in that spot.
Yeah.
And the question's getting asked quite a bit lately about Yiner. Like, he's in a big spot in this lineup because he's the one protecting Yordan Alvarez. You know, Yiner hitting the way he is makes it way more dicey for teams to just throw four balls in the dirt to Yordan Alvarez, you know?
Right,
you know,
right.
So that's big role for him. Big role for
Yiner. As much as it's hard to muster up hatred for the Rays, right at the get-go, Boz goes high and inside
dude,
to Altuve, almost takes
chin
his
music,
head off,
man. Yeah,
like a Pez dispenser.
Yeah, that was
not a little tip of the cap,
nope.
Or put his hand up or anything to Altuve. Just turned around, went back, and threw him three balls in a row. I think he was a little scared of him at that point.
Yeah, man.
And that would have been an awesome home run if Altuve.
Oh, he hit one there?
Yeah, I think he flied out on that one. He popped up, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Kikuchi last night?
Oh, Kikuchi.
Yeah.
He of the sub 2.0 ERA at this point, for sure, right?
2.7 since he became an Astro.
2.7? Oh, okay.
2.7. Yeah, here's his numbers since he became an Astro.
What I meant to say was sub 2.8 ERA since he counted. Still pretty good.
Yeah.
Still pretty good.
Three starts, 16 and two-thirds. He's pitched 16 and two-thirds innings, 2.70 ERA. He's got a whip of under one, which is walks, hits per innings, guys you put on base. He's putting less than one guy on base per inning, which is really good. And then the thing that was the calling card, the thing that Dana Brown pointed to and everybody was saying, why did you give up Loper Fido and Bloss? He's striking out nearly 13 guys per nine innings right now.
Yeah,
which is
Kikuchi,
what he does.
Is Kikuchi just seems, by all reports, to be just in heaven.
Yes, he loves it here.
Because he's in this environment where he's getting all this input and everything, and he works his butt off, all that. They're just gushing about him on the broadcast last night yet again. Kikuchi will be, as the Astros' first Japanese pitcher, I think. This is our conduit, Sean. This is a conduit to where, just as we did with Cuba, we become the destination for Japanese
through
pitchers.
Through Kikuchi,
Kikuchi will be like our La Pena. Have we picked out a nickname for Kikuchi yet? Has anybody put a good one out there?
Well, some people probably have. A lot of people are having fun with
this. Are you afraid they're
going to
be politically incorrect nicknames?
No. Kikuchi is a very easily nicknameable last name for a lot of folks who like to chuckle at, you know, sophomoric genitalia jokes.
What's that old show tune from The Music Man? Kikuchi, Kikuchi, Kikuchi.
I have no clue on this one.
He is hard to get. You don't know?
Nope, I don't.
You didn't used to have to drive around in a Chevy Citation in winter with the windows rolled up as your father, who is a volunteer bassist for the high school musicals, would listen to the soundtrack of The Music Man over and over again as he chain smoked Marlboros with the windows rolled up.
You know what's weird?
You don't have that memory just scorched into your brain.
You know what's weird? The exact same thing happened to me, except my dad just played a different instrument. He was a keyboardist. It was the exact same thing.
Oh, really?
No. Okay.
Hard to play in a Chevy Citation.
Yeah, right. It's a little dangerous.
Yeah.
So Astros went 7 in a row and a game and a half up on the Mariners. And yeah, this Yusei Kikuchi trade, man. So far, so good. Tonight will be interesting. Like, of all the guys lately, Seth, you know, they're going to get Verlander back here soon. Ronel Blanco is the one right now who, if you do the old, you know, the old last five game log thing on Baseball Reference, everybody else looks good. Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, Eric Geddy, Kikuchi. Ronel Blanco is the one where the wheels are a little wobbly right now. So he's tonight. So we get a good start out of Blanco, and everything's copacetic. So.
I'm about to do the best live read for Trajan Wealth in the history of live
reads. That's a tease right there. That's teasing live reads.
I can't wait until they review this. You know, they have to review all of these for Securities and Exchange Commission compliance. This one's going to have the compliance officer. I imagine it's like an angry old lady, but still, she's going to chuckle at this one.
Okay, up next, Seth speaks for Trajan Wealth. up next, practice report. Man, I'm going to give a superlative out for yesterday's practice that I'm having a hard time describing. We'll get to that. We'll hear from why practicing in the middle of the day in August, D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans explains. We'll have that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Okay, so it was it's a hot one out there yesterday at practice. 11:30 start time, 10:45 today. And D'Amico Ryans was asked about that. One of the first, it would be logical that a group of media members, one of which was me, it would stood in the heat for a few hours in the scalding middle of the day in Houston, Texas, that one of the very first questions would be, hey, coach, Why 11:30 p.m.? As we're all shriveling inside the tent there. Why 11:30 a.m. For practice today? Here was D'Amico Ryans.
Today felt like a real training camp day for us with the heat, external elements. As we all know, it's pretty hot and humid here in Houston. It's what we have to deal with. Nothing we complain about. Just something we got to go to work, right? And so I tell our guys, no matter what it is, for me, it's about adversity. And when it hits you, like, how do you respond? And so a lot of guys, some guys responded well today, some didn't. So it's a lot for us to learn from and build off of.
Was this intentional to put it at this time and just to sort of do an acclimation period?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, getting back to it at this time, this is the time we'll be working throughout the season. So I want our guys to understand what it'll feel like, especially, you know, that first half of the season.
And that last part, Seth, was one of the things I was told also off to the side, kind of, is they're kind of treating this like a game week. Mm-hmm. It's a noon start. It's a Saturday, but it's a noon kickoff, something that will happen not nearly as frequently as the last couple of years, but more often than not, they'll be kicking off noon on Sundays. So Saturday is sort of Sunday in this whole analogous situation. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week are the same as a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of a game week. And during the season, they don't practice at 9 a.m. like they do in training camp.
Right,
they
right.
Practice at lunchtime.
Yeah, that's one thing actually I liked about Kubiak was that Kubiak, when you have a noon start, it's relatively early in the day, and a lot of times, you know, teams will practice at like 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. I like when you get out there and practice and get your body going, get your body in the routine of like hard physical activity at noon.
Yeah.
And you're so on game day, that's just one less adjustment your body has to make. So there's that. But then also, and Kubiak started, he had practices like right around noon or so or 11 a.m. So there's that, but then also just facing the adversity. And it's not like it's directly correlated to adversity they'll face during the season. They play in domed stadiums for the first...
Five games, right? Bills? Week six is New England. Yeah, first five games.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yep. Okay, so New England, it's October by then.
Right.
So the first five games are in dome stadiums, and maybe it'll be kind of hot in New England in October, but I think it's more just the mental toughness.
Yes.
You know, it's not heat acclimation as much as it is just mental toughness. And that's where I think D'Amico finds that balance between being new age with all of the GPS tracking and monitoring their speed and giving them rest days and everything. But sometimes it's like disciplining your kids, Sean. Like, okay, you know, the physical punishment, corporal punishment there's better ways than that. But sometimes people don't realize that, like, okay, you don't abandon discipline altogether.
Right.
You still gotta find ways to give them that discipline. Likewise, you don't have to beat them down into the turf for six straight weeks like they did in the old days.
Yeah.
But if you're going to give them the recovery and you're going to really work to give them that time to recover, remember, you got to physically test them, and then let them recover. Just really physically and mentally test your guys. And I think D'Amico's still very much old school in that way.
Yeah, this was not a short practice. I mean, the practice was scheduled to end at 1. He didn't take the podium until, I think, 1:15 or so. So it was a full workout. As far as things that happened at the workout, first of all, injuries. Will Anderson, Noah Brown, Tim Settle, D'Nico Autry, Jeff Okuda, all still working out off to the side in those like catapult vest thingies. Christian Harris was not out there. So, he re-aggravated or maybe aggravated a new injury on Sunday at practice, but he was not out there at all. Back at work, Titus Howard and Kamari Lassiter both practicing, which means I feel like playing Celebration for this because it's the first, you don't have to, Ben, but for the first time all training camp, not just the entire first-string offensive line, the entire first-string offense, because Joe Mixon was getting reps in 11-on-11 at running back yesterday, too.
Yeah.
So you got the whole Monty out there.
Yes, and I don't think it was any accident that CJ and the offense looked as dialed in as they have this entire training
Correct.
Camp. I think they've had backup offensive linemen in there and backup running backs going versus a potentially very ferocious defensive line.
Yeah.
And not to mention, I would say a ferocious front seven when you include Alshire's ability to blitz. Alshire is really good at disguising and timing his blitzes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's got a real good beat on the Texans' offense at this point. Mm-hmm. So, CJ, as you said it was one of the best passes you've seen in your 30 years of attending training
camp. It's been 18 years, and they, yes.
I rounded up.
That was fine. You did. That was, I've described this throw to probably like 10 people in person after practice yesterday who weren't there. He threw a throw, and you know what? I described it on Twitter. And I had a listener actually capture it perfectly. Imagine the throw he made in the Tampa Bay game, Seth, before the touchdown. The last throw he made to Tank before the touchdown pass.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of dropped
the toe tapper.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Like, there's a 25-yard pass, dropped it kind of in a bucket. Tank was kind of in between the safety behind and the corner up front, right in that soft spot there. Imagine that throw, but about 2 or 3 feet closer to the sideline and with the defenders right on Tank. So sandwich the defenders onto Tank with they're practically touching him, and imagine Tank even closer to the sideline. And that was that play. That was the throw CJ made yesterday, and the catch Tank made too. We got to give him credit. It would be the nerdiest debate of all time, but if someone wanted to get a bunch of video and conduct debates of the greatest training camp throws I've ever seen, I'll take that one and you take the field. He is something else, man. Like, he is.
I think CJ is CJ, and I'm not worried one bit about him having a sophomore slump or anything, especially with the added talent this year in receiving weaponry. But I'm really intrigued to watch the run game, you know, especially if Joe Mixon gets a few snaps. If Damian Pierce gets to run behind the starting offensive line, you know, there were moments in that game where there were some things that Damian could have done better, but he's also looking at a picture as he's trying to learn how to make the right reads in the zone running scheme, where it's just a really murky picture in front of him because you had a journeyman right guard playing, you've got a guard playing tackle, and it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder when you've got those situations. So with Titus Howard and Shaq Mason and Laremy Tunsil out there, I hope that looks a lot different for Damian Pierce.
Yeah, well, okay, well, a couple things there. One, I mean, Mixon just looks different than all the guys in the running back room right now. Like, he's just walking around, he looks different. And then it looks different with him in there. Damian looked good yesterday. Damian had a nice run, kind of a wide run to the right side where he just, you know, kind of waited, then cut around the outside. He had a run that you can actually find on the Texans Instagram account. It made the cut of film that the media team got there, where he kind of made it, you know, he found that hole in the line and then made a jump cut at the second level and was able to take off upfield. Damian had a good day yesterday.
Oh, good.
Everything
behind Joe Mixon is dicey right now.
Yeah.
The backup running back may not even be on this roster now.
Yeah, maybe not.
Depending on what they decide to do. I think there's a really good chance that, you know, if they don't really feel good about Damian Pierce, that they look elsewhere for a backup running back.
Yeah, a couple other things that we saw out there yesterday. CJ, aside from the pass to Tank Dell that we just talked about, really nice play. Brevin Jordan getting behind the defense and CJ hitting him on a deep ball that would have been, at the very least, a long gain where Jordan would have been tackled by Al Shire, who was covering him, if not a touchdown. So that was nice. Man, these little out routes, you know, those 8 to 10 yard out routes that Diggs and Nico Collins are so good at, that is just stealing with CJ Stroud as your quarterback.
Well, and the cool thing about that, and we saw this play out last year, was teams started to get a beat on that. Mm-hmm. They saw how good he was with those outs, and they started closing the window. Right about the Cincinnati game, remember Tank Dell made that really nice catch that maybe wasn't a catch on the right sideline, where like it was a great throw and a great catch, but guys were just blanketing that. And that's when the Texans started to exploit it.
Yeah.
Because, okay, they're money on this route. Let's hit some double moves, and off to the races we go. So that part of it's exciting. That's, again, another thing that I think, especially when you add Stephon Diggs into the mix, that's going to be there. Like, that's an automatic for C.J. Stroud. And then C.J. is mentally advanced to the point, and Bobby Slowick and him are on the same page to where they can exploit it when teams really start leaning on it.
Yeah. Bobby Slowick's just got to be rubbing his hands together, like twisting his mustache, like sitting there thinking of all the diabolical things he can do to defense.
I hope he isn't, because he's got to focus on the run game, too. Yeah. That's the one thing we don't know about Bobby Slowick yet is, all right, is he actually capable of coaching? I was about to say scheming, but it's not a matter of scheming. He schemes really well, but you got to execute the run plays better. You just got to be more consistent in the run. Okay. If you want to be a genuinely elite offense, they're capable of being a genuinely elite offense. That's not – the passing game is more important, et cetera, but if you want to be elite, you got to be able to at least credibly run the football.
Seth reminding us to eat our vegetables. Thanks a lot, Seth.
Well, no, it's fun, though. It's fun, man. That's another thing I've always heard about Kyle Shanahan, is that what he wants more than anything on earth is to snatch your soul in the run game. Because that's the most, that's dominance. When you can just run all over somebody, that's the really fun part of football.
Yep.
That's where, and especially when you can close out a game in the fourth quarter just by trucking dudes. That's fun, man.
No, you're right. You're right. There are good vegetables out there. You know, love me some, nice chopped up buttery mixed vegetables.
A game-winning drive where you've got a three-point lead and you just mow down the opponent.
That is
with
fun. You're
third
right.
Down conversion with a run after that. Now a 11 play drive that ends in a kneel down and you ran the ball 10 times.
Yeah,
that's living life.
You're
right.
Okra is good. I like okra. Yes. Okay. Yeah. You're right about that. Paint me a picture, guys, back. Paint me a picture of something positive with Damian Pierce at practice. Great show as usual. I just did. He was good. He was good yesterday. It was a good day for old Damian Pierce. Davis Mills had some throws yesterday, too. He had a really nice throw to Robert Woods. You remember the throw CJ made, Seth, to Nico in the Pittsburgh game, the dagger, that one where he kind of just placed it right over Patrick Peterson to Nico?
Down in the red zone,
ended up being a long touchdown to Nico.
He
Davis had a play that from where we were standing looked exactly like that to Robert Woods. Just a really well placed ball. Like the defender had good position, but Davis kind of put it where only Robert Woods could get it. It was nice.
I think the first and foremost, as your backup quarterback, it looks like they've been out there. He's been out there executing the offense.
Yeah.
Lots of pre-snap motion and everything. You can tell that he's dialed in mentally. My one lingering concern with him is just his tendency to sail the football.
Yep.
It just some of the high balls are not what I want in him right now. And I feel good because I think they can continue to work on that. You know, that's mechanics and everything else like that. And it's not like he can't throw accurately. I think he's been much more consistent and accurate throughout camp this year.
Yeah.
He's just got to work on that, and then he might end up really being something that maybe I don't want to trade the guy away, because you're also now you're stuck in this position where, okay, boy, if this team's capable of making a Super Bowl run and CJ's out for a couple of games, those games really, really matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, for the long term, if he looks really good in the preseason and some other quarterback gets injured, probably not a J.J. McCarthy injury, perhaps, but something like that, there might be a team out there that says, actually the Vikings make a lot of sense because they wouldn't give up. J.J. McCarthy's their quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
They're not in the business. They're not looking for right now this season, so they wouldn't try to salvage it by signing a guy to, giving up draft capital.
And they've got Darnold. J.J. McCarthy probably wasn't going to start week one anyways. You know,
I feel better about C.J. Stroud than Sam Darnold.
I do, too. But we do know who's going to start against the Texans in week three, it would appear. So.
Did I just say C.J. Stroud instead of Davis Mills?
You did.
I feel better about Davis. All right.
You meant Davis Mills?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel better about Davis Mills than Sam Darnold.
But I feel better about C.J. Stroud than Sam Darnold as well.
I do. I mean, that's factually correct,
you're correct.
It wasn't really relevant to what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
I got to ding that first segment that I was really worried about. I didn't get any names.
No, you're good. Hit yourself with that. Yeah, give yourself
that one, but then I got to retract the ding.
Yeah.
For the
ding retraction. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. So that's little what went on yesterday. It was a good and hot practice. They're back at it. 10:45 a.m. today. Let's get to headlines in the next segment. We'll circle back to the Astros. Somewhere they have not been all season long. That is where they are right now. Seth alluded to it, too. An injury that impacts the early part of the Texans' schedule and more wide receiver drama around the league. We will tell you where that is taking place. We'll do that in headlines. That's coming up next.
Payne and
and Pendergast with today's headlines.
August 2nd as Alex drills one deep to left field. He's done it again. Four consecutive games with a home run, and the Astros take a 2-1 lead. Breggy is hitting bombs on a regular.
Yeah, Breggy's on one right now, man. He is on one. He's got 18 bombs on the year. That was last night. They needed all of them. 3-2, the final score last night. The Astros beat the Tampa Bay Rays, and they are now up a game and a half in the AL West, Seth Payne. And we got a third straight, not a literal quality start, because he's pitched, for whatever reason, Yusei Kikuchi gets yanked with 5 2/3, or having pitched 5 2/3. I feel bad, because he would have gotten six innings last night if Altuve didn't bounce that one off his shin in the sixth inning.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he ran his pitch count up pretty fast in that game, the first few innings. Yeah. So it was. I choose to think that Kikuchi just has no ego about him whatsoever.
Oh, I don't think he does. I don't think he does.
I think he's consciously saying, "Hey, I don't want to get credit. I don't want to go on a run that might threaten Framber Valdez's high watermark.
My new teammate.
So let's just go ahead and pull me now.
Been a good pickup so far. I mean, we're only three starts in, but so far the masses that were up in arms over the amount of minor league capital that Dana Brown gave up in that deal, it looks like a whole lot of being alarmist for nothing right now.
I lost track of his pitch selection after a little while, but I thought it was notable that, you know, he'd thrown twice as many changeups as usual the first time he faced the Rays with the Astros. He started off the game, he threw like three straight changeups and then didn't throw it again for a while. I like the cat and mouse between chess maybe game. The Rays having adjusted to his strategy from last time. They changed the pitch selection up. So that part of it was really cool to see. Some really good defensive plays last night. Chaz McCormick had an odd play where Caminero hit a base hit, and Chaz just kind of lazed up on the ball, and Caminero tested him and got to second on it. But other than that, some really good defensive plays. Bregman with another great defensive play last night.
Yep.
That part, they look dialed in. They look dialed in.
Very dialed in. That Chaz play you're talking about ended up costing them a run, because the guy on second scores on a bloop single after that. So, yeah, Chaz needs to get it in gear. Are we concerned about Ryan Presley? This game was closer than it needed to be, because Ryan Presley,
and it
was not like a lot of bad luck or anything like
you're
that.
You're warming up Dubin to potentially come in and save your guy that was just your closer last year. Yeah,
well, and who had been really good for a couple months, but honestly, ever since he hit his vesting option for next year, like literally the next three times out, he's not been very, very good.
I've got mild nervousness and concern over him. I don't feel great when he comes out to the mound. That's where I am with him. It's not.
There you go.
I went to bed after 8.5 innings last night, because I knew that in a save situation, Josh Hader would just be fine.
Yeah.
If the Astros were up by four or something, I'd be nervous as hell. But they were good to go, and I woke up with an Astros victory.
He blew his first save opportunity, Hader did, as an Astro, and then he's nailed down everyone since then. I think it's, 26, 27 straight, something like that? So good job, Josh Hader. Astros up 1.5 games. They play again tonight. Same start time, sometime 5:45, 6 o'clock-ish. Rennell Blanco on the mound tonight for the Astros. Over to the Texans we go. Practice yesterday, midday practice, 11:30 start. So it was a hot one out there. D'Amico Ryans talked about the heat. He also talked about Jalen Petrie. Jalen Petrie has been a big topic in camp because of how he's being used defensively out there, being used in the slot quite a bit as a nickel corner. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the training camp that Jalen Petrie has had. So
Jalen, I mean, first thing first is just he's so fun to work with. He's one of our smartest players on our team, right? He's able to handle a lot mentally and physically. Very gifted guy who's does a phenomenal job, whether it's in coverage, whether it's blitzing, playing in the box, playing back deep. Not many guys have the skill set that Jalen has, and he's a fun guy to work with. He's all about the team. He's a true leader for us on our team, and I'm always excited to work with Jalen, because he's ready for more, like trying to see how much he can handle. He can handle a lot, and it helps our defense just with his versatility, his flexibility, and just his willingness, right, to do whatever it takes for the team to be successful. Like, that's how we want all of our guys.
Where are you on? Go ahead, Seth. Go ahead.
The thing I was nervous about with Jalen Petrie was, you know, okay, but what are you going to do? Are you really going to put him up in man coverage versus a slot receiver in critical situations? The Texans did that a lot in practice over the first few weeks, and it didn't always look so hot, especially when it was versus a guy like Tank Dell or Stephon Diggs.
Right.
I think they were trying to put him in all of the toughest positions or situations that he might find himself in a game, but I don't think that that's how they're going to use him. I think John Harris puts it the best when he basically says, look at him like a linebacker. You know, they line up in nickel a lot, and he's going to be like a nickel linebacker more so than a slot corner. So, but with his versatility, they can do a lot of the things that the Texans started to do last year at the end of the season and in the playoffs, where they started to disguise things and they got a little bit more exotic. They showed Joe Flacco some looks that the Texans hadn't shown before, because I think D'Amico trusted by that point in the season that the defense could handle more mentally. So with Jalen Petrie back there, he's versatile enough as a defensive back slash linebacker that you can do some funky things.
Yeah.
And, you know, the play that I talked about yesterday, Sean, where Fadakasi and Mario Edwards destroyed an inside trap play. They just destroyed it. Another part of that play was Jalen Petrie coming from pretty deep to just
like a
kamikaze.
Yeah.
I think he ended up hitting Fadakasi harder than he hit the running back. But like a kamikaze from nowhere.
Yep.
He just left into the pile, stuff like that. That's what I get excited about with him.
Yeah, because he can handle that role, that nickel kind of linebacker hybrid role. He loves the physicality of that. You know,
yeah.
I think he can handle that. Petrie met with the media after practice yesterday and talked about what he's been working on this camp.
I know I always say this, and it can be a little repetitive, but my patience, like just slowing down and not being a rush in everything that I do, and having a calmness about me, but also still having that when I get there, like I think that's the biggest thing. You know, I can always just get better at that and just continue to improve in that area.
Yeah, he's too jumpy early in his career. He was like, he wanted to jump on everything, like a DJ Swearinger. It was frustrating because, you know, Jalen Petrie is a really bright kid, but he was doing DJ Swearinger type stuff at times, just jumping things too much. The very first play of the game on Friday night, he was deep safety. They were in their base defense, and he was the deep safety. And I was kind of happy that he really didn't show up in the frame until he stayed deep. He was the psychology and the mentality of a safety. At times, you need to know when to pour it on, but then you also need to know when to back off and be conservative. So in his play as a safety, I think he understands the psychological obstacle there is. And then when it comes to when they're using him as a linebacker, I think he knows that that's a different mentality also.
Yep. As far as news around the NFL yesterday, J.J. McCarthy, rookie quarterback for the Vikings, who had a really nice debut in the preseason over the weekend. Going to be a while till he plays football again. He's got a torn meniscus. Kevin O'Connell, the coach of the Vikings, said they're going to wait till they won't know until they get in there and look at it, the surgeons, to know whether or not that shaving procedure they can do on the meniscus, which means a shorter recovery time, or if it's an out-and-out repair, which would mean he's probably out for the season. They won't know what the prognosis is until they get in there. I think it's safe to say, Seth, that we will see Sam Darnold at quarterback in week 3 for the Texans against the Vikings. J.J. McCarthy will not be available early in the season.
Yeah, because they have to be really, anytime it involves any kind of meniscus at all, like, you got to be super careful about it. Or kind of like with Kyle Tucker's injury, you don't know how fast they're going to recover from it. So, I wouldn't hope for a season-ending injury for young J.J. McCarthy.
No.
I feel like Sam Darnold is already, I think he's more prone to turnovers than just about every rookie in the league.
Yeah.
I like the Texans versus Sam Darnold. I feel like I would worry with J.J. McCarthy that he would do what he did at Michigan, which is do exactly what they asked him to do and be careful with the football and everything else like that. And the Texans wouldn't be able to capitalize on your classic rookie mistakes. Sam Darnold, they'll be able to capitalize on a veteran player who still plays like a rookie.
Oh, yeah. No, my gut reaction as a Texan fan is good. This means definitely Sam Darnold in week 3, for sure.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. Wide receiver update. It sounds like Brandon Ayuk and the Niners are getting closer to doing a long-term deal. We'll keep an eye on that. The big one yesterday was Ja'Marr Chase, who has been kind of holding in with the Bengals. He just wasn't in practice yesterday. So he's agitating for a new deal. Now, keep in mind, he's only 3 years in. So he's eligible for a new deal, but that doesn't always happen with wide receivers. So so Ja'Marr Chase, man, this Justin Jefferson $35 million dropped a grenade on the market for the Cowboys and the Bengals and the Niners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Niners are kind of just in a... right now, Ayuk has a lot of leverage in that the Niners have a deal that they're good to go with, reportedly. The reports
Steelers.
They're Steelers. Dang it. The Niners have a deal in place with the Steelers that they're good to go with, they'd be happy with, reportedly. But the reports have sucked on this.
Yeah.
And Ayuk is just kind of sitting there saying, eh, I don't know. I'm not sure.
We'll see.
Yep. He's got a de facto no trade clause.
He kind of.
Nobody wants to trade for a player that doesn't actually want to be there. Like as the Jets find themselves in this situation.
Hassan Reddick,
right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right, week one against the Colts. This already has juice because it's a divisional game, but man, you start to hear people that are going to be playing in this game talk, and you're about to in a few minutes. I cannot wait for week one to get here. Stay tuned for that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.